Every Friday, we have a Friday interview. Really interesting one this week with one of Britain's richest men, the founder and boss of Betfred, the betting shop chain, Fred Doan. You're about to hear him tell his life story. Really, really interesting stuff. From running illegal betting to being stabbed on his doorstep to running a chain of nearly 1,500 betting shops and losing millions of pounds. It's safe to say Fred has been through an awful lot, and he started by telling me how it all began.
My dad was an illegal bookmaker. My dad, during the war, drove ambulances for around Trafford Park. In those days, there was racing 2 days a week. And my old man was an illegal bookmaker. And when I was 13, instead of having a lunch at school, I used to go home, get on the bike, and my dad would have me chasing around all the factories, picking bets up, picking them up from the pubs, taking them to him, and he'd pay me a few quid for it.
Class.
It was a great upbringing. It was. It taught you about life.
And you say, Fred, that you never felt poor. Although you were poor.
Yeah.
Because everyone around you was the same.
Yeah.
So where did that lust to earn a lot of money come from?
It sounds very, very strange, this. It certainly wasn't bred into me by my old man. My old man used to win it and spend it, because in those days it wasn't a business, it was a game. And when he was in the chips, he lived well. When it went wrong, he took his suit to the pawn shop. And that's the way it was. Where did it come from? One day, a guy took me with his kids to go and see one of their relatives in Sale. And I thought, wow, this is posh. This is really posh. And he started telling me about interest. I'd never heard about it, about bank accounts and interest. And I sort of got the bug there. I liked it. And I thought, I'd like to do something with it. And that was a very, very early age. You know, I never thought I had ambition. But I think somewhere inside me, there must have been something.
And did you feel that there were barriers to you being successful because of where you were from and your upbringing, and that was only for the posh lot or the lot that could afford private education? Did you feel like that?
No, I never felt like that. I never expected any big things in life. When I left school, I could read and write just. And I've learned mine since I've left school. I know how to read a balance sheet. I know how to read a lease, etc. But I've picked all my education since school.
So when you left school, you could barely read. Is that fair?
That's about right, yeah. I could read. And I've never been tested for it, but I'd be massively surprised if I'm not dyslexic. I just know it's there, but I've never bothered having it checked. I mean, I was on holiday a couple of weeks ago, and I read a book, and it probably takes me three times as long to read it as it would you. But I get through it.
Did that build at that early age any type of insecurity then? Not being able to read properly?
When I left school, I wanted to be a draftsman, which is, I went to an engineering factory. And if I could have been a draftsman, I'd have been king of the world. And I wasn't, because I hated it. I lasted 6 months being a draftsman, and an opportunity came along to work for a bookmaker when it was still illegal, and I went working for him. And there's another tale itself, being an illegal bookmaker. Believe me, I've had some scrapes there.
Tell us about one of them. Go on.
Well, when I was 14, 15, the police used to come round, and every 2 weeks they'd come round, the sergeant and a constable, and they'd come round for the bribe. And in all my life, I never saw one policeman ever refuse the bribe. Everyone took it.
I shouldn't be laughing, by the way, but yeah, this is a long time ago, right?
Yeah, it is. The police used to come, they used to get the backhander, and it was so funny with them. If a new chief constable came, or a new judge who wanted to make a name for himself, what would happen? They'd say, go and raid some bookmakers. But the police would tell us when they were coming. They'd say, get your punters out of the shop. We used to put stooges in the shop. We used to put a stooge bookmaker in the shop. They'd all get taken away. The shop was closed down for the day. It'd all open up this afternoon. You used to pay the stooges for the money, because if you're a bookmaker and you got caught twice, you went to prison for it. First time, it was just a fine. So I had all that. And one day we got taken by surprise. There was a club in Manchester called the Cromford Club, which was one massive gambling club. And I was there as a 17-year-old. And the the police weren't Manchester police. They sent them down from the Met. So we didn't know them. We hadn't been tipped off. And they arrested, they closed the club, and somebody slipped them a tenner and let me go. So I've got a very clean, no police record, believe me.
How did you get your first break then into the legitimate shops?
Well, in 1961, they changed the act. They had to. And shortly after that, they started tax investing. They knew they'd done the right thing. And I believe, and I still really do believe, that we are the best bookmakers in the world, giving the best service in the world and best protection for punters in the world because we've been established so long. So in 61, it was made illegal. From 61 to 67, I worked for a bookmaker who I thought was God. He looked after me. He was a bad old so-and-so. But he taught me everything that I knew about the game. I learned how to make a book, how to look after punters. I knew what was a big bet, how to cover. So in those years, I got great experience from him. And in 67, the guy retired. And it was a devastating blow to me. And I managed to buy my first shop in 67 with a mixture of borrowed money. I went to see a guy who had got one shop in Salford. So I went, I'd never done a deal in my life. Went to see him and looked at his books, walked the course, as I call it. And I said, how much do you want for it? He said, I want £4,000.
Did you have that money?
No, no. I went home, I said, I'll speak to you Monday, knowing that I had no chance. There was two things that helped me get it. One, the year before, I'd had the biggest bet of my life. I'd had £200 on England to win the World Cup at 8-1. So they paid me £1,600. And that was a massive bet for me then because I was on £20 a week. So it was 10 weeks' wages I'd put on. So I'd got £1,600 there, went home and I scrounged off my mum, my dad, my wife's mum and dad, my brother Peter. We all clubbed in and we managed to get just over £2,000. So I went back to the guy on the Monday and said, Mr. Fletcher, I'm sorry, I can't do it. And he asked me why. I told him. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do, son. I'll give you a mortgage for £2,000. I want 10% on my money. And my first job every Monday morning was to send him a cheque for £20. And that's how it started.
And you were confident that that business would work and you could grow it and you could grow it into an empire? Or at that stage, was that one shop and that was your lot?
Well, let me tell you this. The first time I went into Barclays Bank and I put my lot in there. I put £75. That's what I had. But I always had the ability to cover a bet, know what a bet was. And in no stage of my life has any of my business ever been under pressure. Did I go in to build an empire? Absolutely not. I went in there to feed my family. That's all I wanted to do. But I was good. I was cocky, but I was good at it.
Is there a community in a betting shop? Is there a sense of the punters getting to know each other, or are they solitary figures?
No, absolutely. There's a camaraderie in betting shops. The atmosphere is fantastic. All punters know one another. You know, I saw a man's bet the other week and I recognised his writing from 35 years ago. You did. You just knew your punters. And I knew every punter by his first name. But there was never a grand plan, and I've never had a 3-year or a 5-year plan. That don't work with me.
I don't believe you.
It's true.
I don't think you go from, well, I can see how you go from one shop to two shops. I can see that. How many shops do you have now?
1380.
Right, there's a plan.
Well, I promise you there wasn't, and there's still not much of a plan. And you know, I've had some real scrapes. Lester Piggott rode a horse, and a guy sent another man round with a bet. And he put the £50 bet on with me, but the first guy's instruction to his pal was, if it's more than 2-1 on, don't back it. So the guy puts the 50 quid on, races off. I get a phone call from the shop. He wants to call the bet off. I said, it's too late. You can't call it off. It's halfway round. The horse gets beat. The guy goes in the shop and wants his money back. He kicks off. The police throw him out. He comes down to my shop. He sees me, asks for his money back. He throws a punch at me, hits me. Please come and throw him out again. He goes back to the same shop. He does exactly the same again. At 6 o'clock at night, he knocks at my door and pulls a knife out on me.
In the this was at home or in the shop?
In the shop. He pulled a knife on me and he stabbed me 5 times. My wife is 8 months pregnant. She, incidentally, she was
my... Stabs you where?
Twice in the head, in the back, in the arm and in the knuckle, on my hand there. I had 32 stitches put in me. And the surgeon said, half an inch further, you're dead. The fella got 4 years for it. He'd just come out of prison. But as I said, my wife was 8.5 months pregnant. She was my cashier. I was just covered from head to toe in blood and being stitched. And the first day the fella came out of prison, he phoned me up, he wanted his money back. I said, get lost. Yeah. So, you know, for all of it, I wouldn't change any of it. I've enjoyed it. Yeah, and I still enjoy it, love it.
You seem like a decent bloke. You walk in here.
I hope I am.
Well, and I'm sure you are.
Yeah.
What way do you react when you see someone who has a problem and just as a human being, and they're gripped and they're addicted with the flashing lights of the slot machines or the buzz that you get out of playing those machines, the roulette machines?
Okay. Well,
and I don't mean what way do you react as a businessman, Fred. How do you react
as a human being? Yeah. Well, let me say this. First of all, I never see it personally because I don't go in the betting shops that much. I do still visit my shops, but it's not something that I personally see. How do I feel about it? I feel terrible about it. Nobody wants to see a problem gambler. We do our utmost to protect people. You can self-exclude in our shops and we will never take a bet off you. I can tell you plenty of occasions where we've given money back to punters who have got in for the wrong reason, meaning they've lost fortunes in money through doing silly things because they've had drink, etc. We've given it back and we've barred them from the shops. And I could tell you of a famous sportsman who came into one of our shops only over the last few months and we refused to take the bets off him. We even unplugged the machines because the guy was in. We do not...
You're not going to tell me who that was, are you?
I don't think it's fair.
But what was he doing?
He wanted to play the machines and he wanted to do both. He wanted to play over the counter, meaning horses, or he wanted to play the machines. He was a bit worse for wear and everybody knows the guy, but I'm not going to mention names.
But he's still a famous sportsman? He's still actively in sport?
No. But coming back to your point, nobody wants to see problem gamblers. It's the last thing we want to see. You know, it's bad for the image of the business. It's bad for everything. And, you know, I'm a family man myself. I've got 4 kids. I don't want to see anybody with problems, and we do our utmost to protect them. But, you know, the less than 1% of the population, what do you do? Do you penalise the other 99%? Because if you want that argument, what do you do about alcohol?
But, of course, a lot of the business is moving online now. You're part of that online industry.
Absolutely.
Every bookmaker needs to be. Every bookmaker is. And so all of that control you've just talked about, it's not there online.
Well,
and people can gamble on slot machines, because I've seen it, up to £400 a spin.
I told you.
It's madness.
I agreed with you, but what you were doing, you were having to go at the fob tees in the shops, where I'm saying to you, it's controlled. You don't have those...
What about online, Fred?
Well, online, remember that we're competing with a world market, an international market. What do we do? Do we say, British bookmakers online, you can only have £100, but if you're an Australian bookmaker, you can have as much as you want. You've got to have a level playing field.
And where do you see that? Do you see that industry growing massively?
Which
the online?
Yes.
To the detriment of shops? Do you think the days of boogie shops are numbered?
Yeah, I do. I think we've only got 100 years left in betting shops. That's my belief, because it's a different atmosphere. You know, we mentioned camaraderie before. You get old age pensioners coming in there for the cup of tea, having the pound on. You know, it's not... You know, what we've got to be careful of, we don't crucify betting shops. You know, it's part of the high street.
What trends do you see online? What's happening to the online market?
Well, online, when you say on trends, it's growing. And it's growing because younger people are starting to bet on it, and it's the way they bet. People have got the mobile, they've got the tablet, they've got the computer. It's the convenience of it. It's more private. You know, it's got all the trends with it. It's a younger audience.
And do you believe that people are gambling online knowing they're going to lose?
Yeah, I do. You know, I don't have many bets now. I mean, probably I might have a £10,000 bet before the football season starts, but that's me. Most people bet on football, they'll watch a football match and they'll put a fiver or a tenner on and they'll have a lot of excitement. They're kicking every ball for a fiver or a tenner. And I've got to say, if I got out of the business, I'd have my fiver or a tenner on there because it gives that added excitement.
You say you don't do many bets, but of course you lost a million in one bet, didn't you?
Yeah, I...
What was that?
Well, it was when Jose Mourinho came to Chelsea for the first time. I didn't believe that a manager could win the Premiership in his first season. And I'm a big United supporter, as you probably know. So I threw out a challenge for... I wanted an even £1 million. The wrong man took my challenge. The guy I wanted to bet with was Abramovich, and he wouldn't take the challenge because he's a very private man. So I got no response from him, so I threw it out, and a guy called Victor Chandler, a bookmaker from Gibraltar,
yeah,
took the bet on. So we had an even £1 million. I said that United would finish above Chelsea in the Premiership. Of course, Chelsea walked away with it that year. So early doors, 2 weeks before the end of the season, it was all wrapped up. Chelsea had won it. And I walked into his shop in Park Lane and he had two cashiers in his shop. And I said to one of the girls, "Is Victor in?" She said, "No, he's injured." So I said, "Give him that, will you?" So I gave her £1 million check. She passed.
What was it like handing it over?
It was okay. It was okay. I took him.
Come on, I've got to tell people you're smiling when you say that. It was okay. You're handing over £1 million check.
I said to this girl, "This is for Victor. Give it him." I give her a box of cigars for him, some champagne, and she passed the check on to the other girl, and she said, "Don't give it to me. I'm a United supporter as well."
Are you not a bad loser?
No.
£1 million, and you didn't feel bad?
No, not at all.
Why?
I've been brought up with the game. I know what the knocks are. I've had it so many times. I mean, probably the worst time I ever had was when Frankie Dettori rode his 7 winners. And I get a phone call, "Will you come back to the office? We've got problems." So I went back to the office and the phones were ringing off the hook. Oh, we had 200 shops at the time and it went from bad to worse. I saw the hook. It was like your life unfolding there.
So did I understand this? You had taken so many bets and all of the shops are ringing to say, "We could be in trouble here."
Yeah, but they couldn't get in because we only had 20 lines in the office. It was the days before computers, so we didn't know what the liabilities were. The next thing, I get my brother on the phone. He said, "I see Dettori keeps riding winners. How bad is it?" I said, "I don't know." The next few minutes, he comes in the head office and Dettori carries on riding these winners. The 7th one won. So we went upstairs away from the rest of the staff and we said, "How much could we raise in the next 7 days? And we worked out that we could pull 5 million in the next 7 days. Within a month, we could pull 10 million in. So we made all the shops stay open that night and tell us what we'd lost. And we'd lost about 2.5 million. When we knew what we'd lost and we knew we could settle, we were happy. I went home and slept. But that is one of the only times when I felt out of control.
In that interim period, when you weren't sure and you could have been in trouble.
Yep.
What did that feel like?
It was scary.
Scary in what way?
Well, I never want to let people down. My only concern was whether I could pay. But when I knew I could pay, it wasn't a problem. Because I'm a man of my word. When I shake on it, I've done a deal. You know, I'm running 15 different businesses and all successfully. I had an ambition to be a millionaire before I was 40 and I well beat that. But it's not about money. It's about running businesses and enjoying businesses. You know, you can only have the best car in the world, the best food in the world, the best wife in the world, the best kids, etc. You can only do it once. You can't eat more than 3 meals a day. You know, I still work. We've got 10,000 people working for us. Every one of them calls me Fred. I still live in Salford, where I was born. I've not moved out of Salford. My roots are still here. I think if you slowly grow up with money, you can handle it better than lottery winners.
Do you get pleasure out of money anymore?
I don't even think about it anymore. I suppose if I've got one big indulgence, which I find hard to justify. I have a private jet because that's scandalous.
Why do you say that? You see, you strike me that you're nearly embarrassed about your money. Why? Well,
no,
why?
I'm not. I'm embarrassed about. When you ask me the question, how much you're worth, and I answer you correctly, it sounds as though I'm bragging, and I don't want to brag about money because I don't see any point in it, and I don't like people who show it off.
What's your ambition now, then?
I enjoy working with young people. Over the last couple of years, I started two new businesses with young people, and they're flying. And you feel a breath of fresh air with them. You know, they keep you young there. And what do I do for them? Well, one, I put my money in there, but it's more than that. You need to put your arm around them and give them confidence. When the bank's banging on the door wanting the dough back from them, I'm there to support them. I've got the right lawyers, the right accountants.
In these tough times, would you be advising a youngster to start a business?
100%.
In this, just out of recession?
Absolutely, 100%. Let me say this.
And the potential to fail, lose their shirt, lose everything?
This is the worst recession that anybody in living memory can remember. Right through the recession, I've done nothing but buy. I've been buying everything that I could in properties, in businesses.
Property?
Yeah.
You madman. You're buying property.
Absolutely, and I'm still buying it.
Here's the pauper, by the way, telling the
I'm still
multi-millionaire, he's mad. You're still buying property?
I'm still buying property. I don't think there's been ever a better time to buy property, ever.
Why?
Because I've been picking up properties. I'll give you one little example. I went and bought a 15-acre site that was bought by an Irish company, believe it or not. They paid £11 million for it in 2006 or 2008, just before it all collapsed. I went and bought it off the receiver and I've paid £3 million for it, for an £11 million property. I've sat with it there. I'm going to do something with it. Through this recession, you needed a few things. You needed to believe that the world was going to come back one day, and I think that's going to happen. It always will do. You had to have access to finance, which I've got, but you had to have the confidence that what you was doing was right. And, you know, when everything's negative, that is the time to be buying, and that's why I've been doing it. And, you know, when you say, would you advise young entrepreneurs? Fantastic. They're there. You know, if they've got any skills about them, what is the worst that happens to them? They go and fail. They start again. They fail, start again. They fail, start again. You know, how many more times do you want me to tell you? Keep doing it. The Americans have got the right attitude. You've got to fail 10 times before you're successful.
Here's my last question. There's a humility about you, which is endearing. And I mean that as a compliment.
Thank you.
You seem to be my first impression of you is that you're a confident man, but that you're genuinely humble. And then I'm thinking, but he's called his business after himself, Betfred, and there's a big personality there, and there's, you know, that's marketing and it's branding and it's in your face. And of course, a lot of what you've done around your business is in your face, dressing up in the suits, putting yourself in your ads. And it's in contrast to the man that's sitting opposite me here.
Okay. Betfred came about. It used to be called Doane Brothers. Doane Brothers to start, and then it became Doane Bookmakers. The title was too long. It was too long because Betfred fits on a football shirt. It'll fit on the top of a coupon easily. It's a better name. It tells you what we do. If you go on Google, it tells you we're a betting company. I was quite private. You know, when you ask about what you're worth, etc. I don't really like talking about that. It's not my barra to talk about that. But I had to learn to be the personality of Betfred.
Does that come easy?
Now it does, yeah. I'm very recognisable if I walk around the streets of Manchester. Most people know me now. What I wanted to be is different to Ladbrokes, Hills and Corrals. There's no Mr. Ladbroke, there's no Mr. Hill, there's no Mr. Corral. They're all dead and gone. They were personalities in the day. I'm probably the oldest man in the industry now because I can't imagine that there's many working in the industry who can remember the illegal days. I still remember them. So the working man wants to bet with a bookmaker, not with a corporation. And that's where the Betfred come in.
That's Fred Dunn, and that's our Friday interview. You can hear that again on the podcast if you're looking for it, bbc.co.uk/Nolan.